Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to the Morning Briefing. It's Monday,
October 9th, 2017.
Yeah, I know. It's Monday. It's not the greatest thing in the world, but,
well, you'll see.
I'm your host, Eric Dame. Jake Hughes is your producer. And while Monday may be the least favorite of the days for most of us, this Monday, our show is designed to help alleviate some of that Monday-iness.
Yeah, that's a real word.
Coming up on the show, we're going to replay our interview with the first ever female national commander of the American Legion, Denise Rohan. You'll get to hear her story of how she came to the Legion,
and it's a pretty fascinating one,
and also what she plans to do with her year in the highest elected office in that venerable VSO. Later, we'll be joined by Jonathan and Sabrina of Bunker Labs Austin, down in Texas. Bunker Labs is at the forefront of helping veteran entrepreneurs, and they're having another of their awesome musters down in the live music capital of the world. John and Sabrina, a husband and wife couple who are running things down there, are going to fill us in on the focus, the who's, the what's, and all of the rest of Bunker Labs Austin, which is taking place tomorrow. All of that plus an update on Mission Good Lungs. That's what I've decided to call Jake Hughes' efforts to stop smoking, and so much more. And it all starts now as we welcome the aforementioned Jake Rattlesnake Hughes into the studio. Jake, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty good, Eric. How are you?
I'm all right. Did you have a pretty good weekend?
Yeah, I just kind of spent the weekend in with my dog.
There you go. Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. I went out to the Shogun Fight 17, as I mentioned last week, went on VetTix. I had signed up for VetTix when we had Steven Weintraub of VetTix on the show, just to see what it was all about so I could understand it, doing my good research that you should do before you do an interview with someone on a live program. So I did the research, and then I'd never done anything more with VetTix. I'd never actually looked at any of the tickets. I do get a ton of emails from them telling me, like, hey, this stuff is taking place in the region that you've selected. Well, I actually got an email from a friend of mine saying, hey, the Shogun Fights, because we had talked about them before. He's a Marine Corps veteran. We've had him on before, Eric Kowal, and he works in the mixed martial arts industry from the news side and journalism side. He runs the website mymmanews.com. And I had asked him, like, hey, do you know if there's any veterans fighting? It's in Baltimore. It's pretty close to where our studios are. If there are, maybe we could get somebody to come on and talk about it. There weren't, as far as we were able to find, any veterans on that card. But he did say, hey, but VetTix is doing free tickets to it. So I put in for it, got four free tickets. Myself, my wife, another Navy vet I know, Jason, he and his wife Ariana joined us, went to the fights, had a great time. While I was up there, happened to bump into UFC fighter Al Iaquinta from my previous home of Long Island. I actually didn't know Al before that, but I do know a good friend of his, Aljamain Sterling, and mentioned that to him. So we chatted for a while. So met a UFC fighter. I had to come all the way from Long Island down to Baltimore to meet a guy from Long Island. It's just the way those weird things work. Saw some great fights. Had some interesting things happen there. There was one of the ring card girls. You know, the people who walk around if it's round two? Well, for the first two fights, there were two ring card girls, one on each side. And for the first two fights, the one on my left side had the wrong number for each round of the fight. She thought, apparently, you bring up the number of the round that is just completed. So you had the one ring card lady with the number two because it was the start of the second round. And then the other one had the number one because it was the end of the first round, I guess. Went on for two fights, and then someone caught it and changed it. But there was that, some great finishes, stuff like that. But, yeah, it was great to be able to just go. Again, I paid, like, $20 for a reservation fee. We had to go and pick them up at Will Call, and there was, like, a $20 reservation fee. Four tickets for $20. But basically, I ended up paying $5 a ticket is what it ended up
being. That's amazing. VetTix is a really cool organization.
It is. It's a great thing, and it was great to check it out. So that was that was my weekend, essentially. A lot of house cleaning on Saturday. And then yesterday I woke up. We were out pretty late because of the fights. And I woke up and just, like, my sinuses and throat were just killing me. did nothing but drink water all day and juice and try to stay quiet because, you know, when talking is such a part of your job as it is here, you got to take care of the voice a little bit. So your weekend, though, as you said, staying in with the dog. And as we've said, Jake is documenting his progress on quitting smoking here at ConnectingVets.com. How did the weekend go?
Nice and smooth. There's no issues. It's been 3 weeks now, and I don't even feel the urge anymore.
In those 3 weeks, you've had what? Didn't you have like one cigarette?
Yeah, I had one slip. Yeah,
like a half of one.
Yeah, almost. I gave in. I started smoking it, and halfway through, I'm like, What am I doing? Why am I doing this?
Yeah,
I put it out, and that's been it.
You know, at the fights, they have an outdoor smoking area at the arena where the fights were held in Baltimore, the Royal Farms Arena. And I did go out there and have one. But other than that, I think I didn't have any yesterday. And on Saturday, I don't think I had too many during the day, if any. So, yeah, just one over the last like 2-3 days for me. So that's a good thing.
It's a step in the right direction, yeah. But you need to step up your game.
Yeah, I do. And actually now, after going there, I was like, you know, I need to start training martial arts again. And we found that one of the places where a lot of the fighters who were fighting there, a lot of regional fighters, a lot of people from Northern Virginia, Maryland, D.C., some from out of the area as well. One of the fighters, this is how small a world it is, Matt Semmelsberger was his name. And I was like, Matt Semmelsberger, where do I know that guy from? I was trying to think. I was like, was he on the Ultimate Fighter or no? I actually called one of his amateur fights for television.
Really?
Up in New York. Yeah.
How weird.
I looked it up and I was like, oh, not only that, I just mentioned how I bumped into Ally Aquinta and how I knew Aljamain Sterling because Aljo and I had actually called fights together before, had him on a previous radio show that I was on before that. The fight I called with Matt Semmelsberger, I called it with Aljamain Sterling as my color commentary guy. Just a weird, weird coincidence there. But yeah, it was a good weekend, I would say. It was overall a good weekend, had a pretty good time. And I think because we were at the fights, we were looking at the different gyms that people were representing, and we found ones in very close to the town that we live in. Seems like a pretty good one, and has a program for children too, like little guys from 4 to 7. And my son he'll be 5 in January, so perfect age for him. So yeah, we're going to maybe check that out and
start young.
Yeah, and try and get me back into a shape other than round.
Yeah, I need to start working out again too. It's you know, honestly, it's been almost a year since I've seen the inside of a gym. It's kind of sad. I'm a little doughy right now.
Hasn't been that long for me. I mean, I'm doughy too, but I've been able to go to the gym a few times. Really, when I was down here, when my family was still up in New York before they moved down for 2 months, that's when I was going to the gym. Most often, I would say. So, all right, taking a look around at the world of news, we've got a horrible story coming out of New York City. A National Guard soldier decorated for bravery in Iraq has died from injuries suffered in a collision in New York City last week. 33-year-old Marcus Brown was speeding and lost control of his van on a Staten Island road and collided head-on with a city bus. Police say he died Saturday at Staten Island University Hospital. His two passengers and the bus driver suffered minor injuries. He's a native of Brooklyn and served in the Army National Guard, received the Bronze Star for his actions in Iraq in 2008 after an IED blew up his vehicle, killing his commanding officer and the vehicle's driver. So that actually sounds like the Bronze Star with V for valor.
Yeah.
So, you know, just a bad story. And just, man, oh, driving is so dangerous. And you and I, as motorcycle riders, I actually woke up this morning and was planning on hopping on the bike to ride in.
Me
and
too.
Then I opened up the garage and saw it was pouring rain outside and said, okay, guess I won't be doing that. Apparently, this is the tropical storm, the remnants of it. That hit Mississippi a couple days ago.
That's this
that we're getting right now. It's supposed to be kind of today and then a little bit more on Wednesday. Tomorrow, I think, is supposed to be okay, so I may ride in tomorrow. But driving is so dangerous. I mean, so dangerous, really. Being out on the roads, we've talked about the gun control issue, which is certainly a serious issue in this country. About 13,000 homicides and 30-something thousand overall deaths, the majority are suicides, with firearms, pales in comparison to the number of traffic fatalities each year. I mean, they're two different subjects, but when you look at just the raw numbers, you're much more likely to die in a car accident than you are being shot by somebody else. Vastly more likely. I mean, it's a significant difference. And when you start doing things like speeding or weaving in and out of traffic, I saw somebody doing that on the way to, where was I on the way to? I'm trying to remember where I was going yesterday. Or was it the day before?
Were you going to the fights?
Nah, well, when we were going to the fights, we were driving into a major city. And anytime you do that, you're just going to be like, what in the heck is that person doing? Until 2 seconds later, oh, what's that person doing? They just seem to be trying to beat each other at getting worse at what they're doing. Maybe it wasn't. No, I didn't really go anywhere yesterday. So it must have been someplace Saturday. Maybe going up to get gas in my car. I think that's what it was. Driving up to get gas usually at Costco. It's a little cheaper. So I was driving up there, and this guy was zipping in and out. And you think about things like this, and now we've lost, you know, a Bronze Star with V recipient up in New York because he was speeding and lost control of his van. Just a horrible, horrible thing. Speaking of the Iraq war, an immigration in Washington state has immigration judge in Washington state has declined to release an Iraq war veteran from custody while he fights the government's efforts to deport him. His name is Chong Kim, and we've talked about him a little bit before on the show. He's a South Korean immigrant, green card holder, lives in Portland, Oregon, and struggled with drug addiction, homelessness, and PTSD following his time in Iraq in 2009 and 2010, leading to convictions for burglary and several other charges. Kim's lawyer and friends have said he has done well since completing a substance abuse treatment program run by the VA earlier this year, but immigration agents arrested him in April and brought him to a detention center in Tacoma. They plan to deport him because of those convictions. Now, a friend of his, Matt Luce, 41 years old, of Troutdale, Oregon, who attended high school with Kim, says it's just wrong to be deporting an Army veteran. Despite his convictions, he was on and continues to be on the right path. This is just a travesty of justice. Now, Kim joined the National Guard in 2005, served in Iraq in 2009 and 10 before being honorably discharged, came to the U.S. at 5 years old, and became a legal permanent resident in 1981. Doesn't even speak Korean, but may be deported to Korea.
Yeah, so. See, that's my issue with this whole thing is I know that the law is the law, but there has to be considerations taken in for certain situations. And yeah, he may be, you know, in the country illegally right now, but to deport him would be a serious detriment to his well-being. I mean, just because he couldn't, how can you survive in another country if you don't even speak the language?
It's not even that he's here illegally. He's here legally, but he broke the law, which means you get deported. Here's my question, Jake. Been in the United States for 31 years. He's 36 years old now. He's been here since he was 5. Why did he not, actually more than 30, so he's about 40 now, so it's 35 years that he's been here. Became a legal permanent resident in 1981. That's when I was 2 years old, so 35 years ago. Why has he not become a citizen between 1981 and now?
That's a good point.
And you know what? If he had, which he certainly had the option to, there was nothing holding him back from doing it. This wasn't an illegal immigrant. This was a legal permanent resident, 1981. Why not take the steps? I mean, he just decided not to, essentially. He knew he wasn't a citizen. If he had taken those steps and become a citizen, then you would have the rights that are granted to citizens. Otherwise, no, you're not. And it is the law, and you can say, well, he served the country well. He's also a criminal. And whether it was drug addiction, PTSD, you commit a crime, you commit a crime, man. There's no, I'm not the type of person who gives people too much of an excuse for it. If you're stealing bread because you have starving children, okay, that's fine. This guy was stealing to feed a drug habit, it appears. I don't know if I'm okay with, I understand the problems, but you had 35 years. Okay, he was 5 years old. So let's go 13 years minus 35 is what, 20, 22, something like that? There. 22 years as an adult and did not become a citizen in those 22 years. There's a path to it. Didn't do it. Why? Join the military, didn't become a citizen. Why? When you join the military, it becomes even easier for you to become a citizen. You can actually do it while you're in the military. I know people who did that. It makes the path even easier. There are people who will help you. All the costs that are usually associated with it are basically gone when you're in the military. Still did not become a citizen. All right, then. You're a South Korean citizen. So then when you commit crimes, this is several crimes. Burglary, there's drug crimes, there's other stuff. Vandalism, I think, was the last one that he actually got picked up at. Outside of like a 7-Eleven or something like that, he was doing something. You commit several crimes, you're going to get deported if you're not a citizen. Served in the National Guard, that's great. Did good things while you were in the National Guard, that's great. What'd you do when you got out? Why didn't you become a citizen while you were in? It's not, I don't think it's as easy a conversation as some people would like it to be, where you say, hey, he served in the Army honorably, so he should be able to, what, never go to jail? Never be deported? Like, no, man.
I'm not saying there shouldn't be consequences for his actions. He should go to jail. I'm saying we need to look harder on the issue of deporting him.
Yeah.
That is a question that we should be examining, because as I said, he really can't survive if he goes to South Korea, because I've been there before. There are a lot of people that speak English, but it's mainly around military posts. Yeah. And if you're not a citizen, if you're a citizen there, the government doesn't really offer forms in English.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what? Maybe should have thought of that over the last 22 years. Why didn't his parents take the step for him to become a citizen? Why didn't he, as an adult? He's been in this country for 35 years as a legal permanent resident and served in the military, you know, did what, 5 years in the Army National Guard. And again, all this opportunity to do that. And now people are saying, well, he shouldn't be deported. Well, maybe not. And he wouldn't have been if he had taken the steps to citizenship. Why not? What's the reason? If he could give me a valid reason, and that's part of the thing that you don't hear people talking about in this, well, why didn't he become a citizen? No one seems to be asking that question in the media, because, he, is he a sympathetic character? Maybe. I mean, yeah, you can say, oh, PTSD, it seems PTSD is blamed for, it's kind of a catch-all. Oh, this guy, hey, man, there are a lot of people I know who are diagnosed with PTSD who don't become drug addicts. There are a lot of people who don't commit crimes. There are a lot of people who don't do any of the things that this guy has done. So, it makes him, again, a sympathetic character. A burglary, his lawyer says a burglary, and another case which his lawyer described as a dumb prank in which he filled a beer bottle with gasoline, lit it on fire, and threw it at the outer wall at the back of a hardware store.
Well, yeah, that's a dumb prank.
That's a
Molotov cocktail.
Prank. Yeah. It's just a prank. Just a prank.
See, that's the thing. Those crazy kids.
When
you know how they do.
These news stories, it's often everything is just minimized. Like, oh, it's just a dumb prank. Molotov cocktail. Okay, if you are 10 years old and you've seen one on TV and you decide, well, it'd be pretty cool, let me do that. Okay, that's a dumb prank. When you are 40 years old almost, convicted of attempted arson in a special veterans court. So here's the other thing. He even got to go to one of these special veterans courts that are specifically set up for veterans. He committed arson, and they put him in a 4.5-month inpatient substance abuse treatment program run by the Department of Veterans Affairs. Here's the other thing. 4 years ago is when he had the first incident, the burglary incident. Judge let him go, warned him not to get in trouble again. Those 4 years, he could have been deported then. He knew he could have been deported. Still didn't take any steps that we know of towards becoming a citizen. If you're not a citizen, you don't get the same rights as citizens do. It's very cut and dry. It's very cut and dry. That's like saying, if you're driving a car and you don't have a license, yeah, but I know what I'm doing. I mean, I'm allowed to do it. And one time when I was driving my car before, I stopped someone from getting into an accident. Well, it doesn't matter. You're not licensed now. You're not allowed to be driving a car. You can't do it. It's very, very strange, man. It's very, very strange to me that everything seems to be based on, well, he was a veteran, he did this. So what? He didn't follow a bunch of other rules. Burglary, arson, becoming a citizen. There was a specific step and path that he could have taken and been fine, have no chance of deportation. He chose not to do that, and no one seems to be asking why. That's what I don't understand.
Well, maybe, call me a bleeding heart if you will. I still think that, put him in jail, absolutely pay for his crimes, but deportation is a kind of thing that would, put him in serious harm's way. That's me. I know you're a bit more of a pragmatist than I am.
Yeah.
So that's my opinion.
Well, here's the other thing. He's already shown a pattern. Last time he was released and told, like, hey, just don't get into trouble again. Okay. Starts throwing Molotov cocktails at a hardware store. This is a pattern. Hey, he's doing well now. You know how many people have been doing well for a period of time and then have reverted? I mean, you can't say it. And if you have the opportunity, what if the next time he throws a Molotov cocktail at a building that has people inside of it that's flammable and the building catches on fire and someone dies? Then how do we look for someone who shouldn't have even been in this country anymore because he committed crimes that violated his legal permanent resident status? I understand that it's not going to be easy for him to go to Korea if he doesn't speak Korean. Whose fault is that? Whose fault is it? It's not my fault. It's not the court system's fault. He's the one who committed the crime. He does not speak Korean because he's been here for 35 years. But as I've been saying repeatedly, 35 years is a long time. And people talk about how long it can take to become a citizen. It doesn't take 35 years. Doesn't take anywhere near 35 years. Had he started getting that ball rolling the last time in 2013 or before that, I mean, that was 3 years after. And that's the other thing where they talk about, you know, they seem to intimate that it's his military service, the PTSD and the drug addiction and everything came after he was in the military. We're talking 3 years before between when he left the Army and when he got arrested. So, I mean, did this stuff, was it taking place the whole time and he was just getting away with it? I mean, there's a lot of questions that are raised, but I don't always like how stories are framed, you know? I don't like how it's like everything about this guy. Oh, it's just great. Oh, it's just great. I mean, yeah, he committed a couple of crimes, but he's doing so well now. And he was in the Army. When people talk about that veteran status as well and like, oh, well, he served in the Army. Okay. I know a lot of people who served in the military who are scumbags, absolute scumbags. Yep. I know quite a few of them. Everybody who served knows them. People who were kicked out of the military, people who were honorably removed from the military despite having been scumbags their entire time in. I mean, it happens. So I don't know anything about this guy. He's got people telling you, oh, yeah, he's a great guy. He's this, he's that. Okay, well, those people know him pretty well. Those people are also pretty biased, you know? Like, I mean, this is something that they're activists on behalf of him. Can we really take everything that they're saying totally seriously? I don't know. I don't know the guy.
Like you said, it's a sticky situation.
It is. For me, hey, should have become a citizen, dude. That's it. That's kind of the be-all, end-all for me. Like, citizenship is a serious thing. It comes with rights. Like this, that would have kept him from getting deported, where you get to stay within the nation, also comes with responsibilities. And I think that's why some people don't become citizens, because there are other things that you need to do if you're a citizen, whether it's something minor but just irritating like jury duty or the other things that you need to do. There are tax differences for citizens and non-citizens. There could be a number of reasons. I don't know why. What I do know, 35 years in the country, 22 or so of those as an adult, and he never took the steps to becoming a citizen. Served in the military. Thank you for your service. It's wonderful that you did that. It doesn't have anything to do with the other, you know, because you did one good thing doesn't mean that the other bad things that you do get you saved from it. If they ever change that, I could see a situation where they say, hey, if you serve in the military, you are a citizen after that. You know, I would be okay with that. However, that's not what's in place right now. Maybe it should be. Maybe that's something that we should be looking at. Hey, if you serve in the United States military and receive an honorable discharge, you become a citizen. Does that work for you? Would you be okay with it?
Yeah. Service guarantees citizenship. Would you like to know more?
Starship Troopers. There you go. Yeah, Mr. Heinlein. It's one of those things. I mean, that's essentially what this story is about. People are saying because he served in the military, he should have the same rights and protections as United States citizens, despite not being one. Well, there's one way around that, and that is granting citizenship to those who serve. At this time, I think they're trying to raise up numbers of the military. It ebbs and flows. You know, I was in during the surges when we had I worked in recruiting when we were trying to build our numbers up. And then, of course, I left the military in 2011 when they said, hey, we've got too many people, so we're going to cut 60,000 sailors over the next couple of years. You're one of them.
Yeah, I was in during the surge too, and it's like I remember that period. There's a period of time where you couldn't kick a soldier out. I had a soldier that never once in 5 years passed a PT test, wow. but he stayed in the military because we needed bodies.
Well, stop loss too. They were holding people who were finishing up their time, people who were supposed to retire. They were holding them in.
My first sergeant got stop loss, and I'll tell you this: that guy never left the FOB ever.
He wasn't taking any chances.
Nope.
He was like, no. We're not playing this game. It was an interesting time where you had a lot of people in, and it's around the time that this guy came in too, and there were a lot of people who came in at that time. Who received waivers of various types, who had issues before they joined the military. Not saying that this guy was, but it was a time period where, yeah, in all of the branches of services, except for the Air Force recruiting station. I remember, you know, a lot of places that you go, you have the Navy, Army, Air Force, and Marine Corps. They're all together, the Armed Forces recruiting stations. The Air Force one was like always closed. It was open like 2 days a week. I think they were required to be open 2 days a week, but they just didn't need as many people as everybody else did, and were able to be a lot pickier and choosier than we were. So while our guys were there 7 days a week, the Air Force was like, yeah, we'll make Tuesday our Monday and Wednesday our Friday, and there you go. Aim high. It was fantastic. Then the Coast Guard recruiting station. I don't even know where those were.
Yeah, I never, there wasn't one in my recruiting station.
I don't know if I've ever, no, I take that back. I have seen one when I was down in Jacksonville, and it was not work. I was just driving around. I think I had a hockey game someplace, and I was driving there, and I saw in a shopping center a Coast Guard recruiting center, and I was like, whoa, what's that all about? And I tried to go in, closed. Again, kind of by the same rules as the Air Force. The rules here on the morning briefing, well, that we have fun, that we talk about all those things that inform and entertain the veteran community. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, we are going to replay our interview with Denise Rohan. Denise is the first woman elected to serve as the national commander of the 2 million plus members of the American Legion. It's a morning briefing, October 9th, back after this.
Helping military veterans stay connected.
We make it easy.
We are CBS Radio's ConnectingVets.com. Connecting vets every day.
Online and all over social media. Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter at Connecting Vets.
Welcome back to the morning briefing for Monday, October 9th, 2017. We are only 22 days or so away from Halloween, my wife's favorite holiday. Jonathan, where do you stand on Halloween?
I love Halloween. Any holiday where you get to scare people and give candy, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
I'm all for it.
I saw a costume. We were out looking for even more decorations. Our house was already the one in our complex where people were coming by to see the decorations because we have a three-floor townhome. Every floor on the outside has something. There's zombies in the windows. There's skeletons sitting on top of our door and all sorts of other stuff. But that wasn't enough, so we were out getting more things. I just hang them where I'm told, basically. Like I'm a tool to decorate the house. I have little to nothing to do with the actual decoration. But going out there, I saw this costume that reminded me of when I was stationed in Jacksonville, and I had some friends who had a house, and they made kind of a haunted lawn, not the house. And all of us would be there, there would be people hiding and people doing stuff. I stood out about halfway along the driveway where people would walk right before they turned into the walkway, wearing this like black Grim Reaper type cloak with black skeleton gloves on. And one of those masks where the face is just black. You can't see inside. It's just cloth. It's like a one-way mirror. I could see them, but they couldn't really see me and stayed as still as I could. And then when the kids got there, I'd hear them, they're right in front of me, like, this ain't a real person, man. It's one of those things that you buy and you put it, and I'd wait until just the right moment and then move.
Yeah.
And it was so much fun doing that. I've asked my wife if I can do that this year at Halloween, and she said no.
Yeah.
So she's not going to let me scare the young children and the older children as well, apparently. I think I should be allowed to, but apparently it's not going to happen. Well, we're hoping that we'll hear from the good folks at Bunker Labs Austin still. They haven't called in yet, but hopefully they will. If not, the Bunker Labs Austin muster is taking place tomorrow in Austin, Texas. So if you're down there, whether we're able to talk to Jonathan and Sabrina today or not, you'll be able to check that out tomorrow down there. Go to Bunker Labs, just Google Bunker Labs Austin. I think they have their own website within the Bunker Labs family there, but you can check it out and find out all about the muster. If you're a veteran entrepreneur in the Texas area, this is where you absolutely want to be going. It's bunkerlabs.org/Austin. Again, hoping that they, maybe they're just running a little bit behind. It's Monday, man, and people run behind on Mondays. Happened to me today. I started walking out to, I didn't know if I was going to ride my bike or drive the car because I didn't know it was raining outside
yet. It's not a bike riding day today.
I made it all the way into the garage where I was like ready to go to whichever one and realized I didn't have my shoes on. I was wearing socks. It's that kind of Monday. Like I got plenty of sleep, but I'm still exhausted. I also woke up. My wife is gone. She's traveling again. So you got so much more to deal with all of that. Yeah. But when it comes to what I have to deal with, it's nothing compared to Lieutenant Peter Vapor.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Navy Supply Officer. assigned to Naval Construction Group 1 in Port Hueneme. It's where a lot of the CBs are out on the West Coast, out there in California. He's the latest in the long line of active duty and retired Navy personnel to be charged with taking bribes from Fat Leonard Francis, Malaysian defense contractor who ran the Glen Defense Marine Asia Company in Singapore. Vapor is also facing a possible court-martial on up to 4 charges accusing him of patronizing prostitutes. And by saying that, we don't mean like he's their patron. He's funding their lifestyle. Well, I guess in a manner of speaking, he was, but meaning that he was actually going to see the ladies of the night, the prostitutes over there, which you are not allowed to do. He's also got, along with patronizing prostitutes, conduct unbecoming an officer. That's kind of a catch-all that they get all of them with under the UCMJ. Making false official statements and violating lawful orders. Article 32 hearing at Norfolk Naval Station was held on October 3rd. Most of these things come from Fat Leonard.
Yeah.
The contact with Fat Leonard, basically, that this guy, whew, man, he's taken down a large chunk of the, large chunk of 7th Fleet, really.
So are people still doing business, for lack of a better term, with him?
No. This is an investigation of old stuff, basically. He was assigned to Singapore at the time of the alleged misconduct. Singapore-based Naval Logistics Group Western Pacific. It's one of those Navy commands where it's not like a huge base or anything, but they're over there. They got like an office building. A 1-year time frame between September 2012 and September 2013 when he was arrested in a San Diego hotel. We're hearing all sorts of things about all sorts of people involved in this, up to the admiral level, like 4-star admiral level. There's a whole bunch of people who are looking at a whole bunch of charges, all because of Fat Leonard.
How many people do we have a number of how many people he's...
I don't have a number. let me see if they have one here. Okay, so we know that a bunch of people have already, some people have been charged and convicted. Other ones are still investigating. This guy, it looks like he's in the process. More than 200 others, including roughly 30 admirals, have been scrutinized during the ongoing investigation, according to Military Times. Well, 200 others, and 30 of them are Navy flag officers. Admirals, what are you doing, man? Well, life wasn't good enough.
Yeah, I mean... if you're going to do something and you're going to get caught, I mean, I don't know.
I'm just going to go all out.
I was thinking, my mom used to always say, you know, if you're going to get caught, you may as well get your money's worth. But in something like this, maybe you shouldn't.
Yeah. Well, Fat Leonard was found guilty in 2014 of taking $35 million in basically unlawful contracts from the Navy. He's currently in prison, but he has also turned stool pigeon. He's cooperating with federal and Navy authorities as they prosecute others involved. Because here's the thing. Fat Leonard, who is his contractor.
I just love the name, by the way. We can't say that enough. No,
anytime there's a story. Somebody, though, out in our newsroom one day was dealing with this story and got angry at how many times they were hearing and seeing Fat Leonard. I don't know. I think of him and Caitlin for some reason. It was like, I swear if they say Fat Leonard. So Caitlin or Mac, one of the two of them, I think, who was like, if I hear Fat Leonard one more time. So Fat Leonard is a contractor, and that's bad that he was kind of the guy who was able to weasel his way in and get $35 million in contracts. Some of which, like, basically was given money to do nothing is what it amounted to. But here's the thing. The Navy, they're not as concerned with Fat Leonard as they are with people like Lieutenant Vapor, who's charged with this, and these 30 admirals.
Yeah.
30 admirals. Man, over the next few years, you may see the promotion rate from 06 to 07 open up real wide.
Hey, at least for 30 people.
What are your chances of making admiral? About 100% right now. I remember there was a time, like, if I had been eligible for chief in my rate, chief petty officer, like 2 years earlier than I was, I would have had a 100% advancement rate. Like, there was 100% chief. Everybody who made board for chief in the Navy, that's, you take a test to make for chief, and then that's called making board. If you pass whatever the cutoff is, if they have 30 spots in your rate and you are number 29, you get to go. If you're number 30, you get to go. If you're number 31, you don't. That means you get to go to board. You submit a package. Yeah. They review you, blah, blah, blah. There was a time, about 2001, 2002 timeframe, where it was 100% to chief for my job, Navy journalist at the time. part of the reason for that, they were failing people out of school left and right. So there just weren't a lot of people making it into the rate, which is part of the reason why they ended up merging us with photographers, lithographers, and draftsmen. Don't ask what those other two jobs did. I don't even think those people knew at the time the merger took place. And then you saw the percentages drop down. So by the time I got eligible for chief, like 2-3 years later, it was down back where it should be, 5-10% or something like that.
And funny, back in the early 90s when I was going from E4 to E5, they just said, no, it's not going to happen. Nobody's going to make it. There's not going to be any new E5s. It's just not going to happen.
There have been, and one of the weird things that was part of, I talked about this earlier on the show, how the Perform to Serve program, as it was called, the Navy put in, I don't know how we got on this subject, but hey, let's go with it.
Yeah.
It was essentially for first-term sailors. Your E1 through E3, you had done 4 years, and because they weren't in any type of position where they would, their work would really be, you'd be able to look at them individually and say, like, well, this person did that, and that. Mm-hmm. It allowed their commands to kind of put them in a place, and then they would be recommended and compared against other people who had done the same amount of time and then told whether they could re-enlist or not, because the Navy decided they had too many people. They decided to expand that all the way up through E6, so through people like me who had been in for 13 years using the same criteria, because part of the reason they said was that they were getting rid of numbers. The other one was that promotion. I was just so slogged down. So what they ended up doing was removing people who had been promoted and then promoting people who had not been able to get promoted into those spots.
Okay.
Do you see where there might be a problem with
that?
Yeah. And then a few years later, here we are, 6 years after I got out, and all of a sudden ships are smashing into each other left and right. Maybe some of our people who would have been senior leadership now, who five, six years ago were forced out of the Navy, would be in those positions. Instead, you force them out and put people who were maybe not quite as good into those positions.
Yeah, experience means something.
Yeah, well, and one of the people from, when I went through that issue, and I was... Honestly, I was kind of okay with it. I didn't like how it happened, but when it happened, I was like, 13 years is long enough.
Yeah.
Did I really want to do 7 more years to get to retirement? Meh, I don't really know. They also forced out the Sailor of the Year from my ship.
Really?
Yeah. It had nothing to do. It was called Perform to Serve, which may make you sit there and think like, well, Eric just wasn't performing.
Yeah.
No, there were a certain number of openings within the job for the entire fiscal year. And by the time they came to look at me 9 months out from my end of enlistment, all of the spots for my job had been given out. Mm-hmm. So they said to me like, well, would you want to go be a bosun's mate or a master at arms or these other rates? And I said, no, I'm going to get out. And they gave me a year's pay, separation pay, essentially, because it wasn't my fault that I had to get out. And things worked out pretty well for me. But there were other people who weren't as well set up, where their jobs maybe didn't transition to the civilian world as well, who were forced out. And some of them, like Sailors of the Year. Yeah. I know of at least 2 or 3 Sailors of the Year from a command who were booted out of the Navy for nothing.
And the transition from a journalist to a bosun's mate was probably would have been smooth for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Nothing like telling people like, lift that anchor, I guess. I don't know. I'm going to write you a 300-word think piece on how you should be painting better. It's like
things like conjugate that. All verbs.
Or master at arms. Like, no, man, I had to stand duty. I didn't particularly like it. Now you want me to do it all day long?
I know, right?
No. Anyway, so yeah, this guy, this naval supply officer, a Lieutenant Vapor, not convicted yet, but he's moving to trial. 27 years he's been in, prior enlisted. He's a lieutenant who's been in for a while, and again, dating back a few years.
When did all this come to a head? All the thing with Fat Leonard.
Well, he was convicted in 2014.
So it's been going on for a while.
Yeah, I think it was about like 2010, 11, sometime like that they first found out. No, it was after that. It was like 2013 maybe. So yeah, you're talking about a guy, because when we looked at, they said what period of time this was supposed to have happened in his life, which I think they said was like 2012 to 2013. So around that time, a couple years before he was convicted. This guy, this lieutenant, enlisted in 1990, 15 years as an aviation maintenance administration man. Was a first-class petty officer, same rank as me, before getting a direct commission as a Supply Corps officer in 2005. So he was an AMA, I believe that was the rate, Aviation Maintenance Administration, went officer into supply, and was apparently putting in some requisition forms for things that you're not allowed to, namely prostitutes and other things.
I don't understand this, because my older brother was always in trouble, so I saw him get in trouble, so maybe I learned from that, but I just don't understand. You know you're doing something wrong. You know you're in a situation where things are going to be checked left and right. And but you're going to go ahead and do it anyway. I just don't understand that thought process.
I don't either. I mean, I guess this guy was in for 27 years. So let's say he joined at 18. That makes him, what, 30, 45, something like that?
So how many internal reviews has he been through? That's the thing that gets you know when you do this stuff. You know how it's checked. I don't get it. Don't understand.
Well, I mean, and he's 45 years old. So, you know, and when you think about it, and this is a weird way to look at it, but when you hear about the admirals that are dealing with this, these are guys who are going to be pretty advanced in age, I suppose is the nice way to say it. Most of them are going to be older people, not 45 years old. Most of them are going to be 60 or older, you know, things like that. It takes a while typically to get up to admiral, at least in your 50s, where, you know, if they face these charges, they might think, well, I had a pretty good run of it. This guy's 45, man. That ain't that old.
No.
He's still got a lot of time left, and he may be spending quite a bit of it in the pokey.
Oops.
Yep. Might not be good for him.
Yep.
But what are you going to do about that? I don't really want to talk about the kneeling at the football games. People are going to kneel. People are going to be upset. Yeah. The whole thing about the vice president, he shouldn't have left. Well, if he wanted to, that's his right as an American.
But the interesting part about that is, did they plan this trip just so that he could leave? If so, that's done on taxpayer dimes, so they're using taxpayer money to make a political point.
Good
that has nothing to do
that.
With the actual, but
there's no way to do it. I mean, he's from Indiana and he was at a game in Indiana, so you know, it kind of makes sense. Was it just for that reason? People are saying, oh, he had to know. Again, good luck proving that. May it have been? I suppose it could have been, but there's absolutely going to be no way to prove that unless you have a recording of him saying, like, I'm going to show up and then I'm going to leave right away. We saw a lot less of it the previous week. This weekend, a little bit more of it again. A lot of people were surprised about that coming out on the heels of the shooting in Las Vegas, where, again, law enforcement officers showed how they put themselves on the line for Americans. And this protest is against law enforcement officers, which the whole
protest. It's not against law enforcement officers. It's against the treatment of a certain section of our society by law enforcement officers. So we need to get that. It's not all law enforcement officers. There are some good ones out there. There are certain ones that this is directed towards.
There's a lot of people who are involved in these protests who think that it's against all law enforcement officers.
And
are
again,
racists.
But that I think we should.
Colin Kaepernick has said things to that effect that this is just a slave plantation.
But it wasn't towards everything. It was towards one specific idea, and it's been hijacked. And I think I think that's wrong. That if we don't keep bringing this back to what it was originally intended, then it's going to get out of the way and it's going to become something it's not.
Colin Kaepernick, the one who started the NFL protests, said that the police force is nothing but enforcing a slave plantation mentality in the United States. He did not say bad cops. He said the police force. So the guy who started it in the NFL, I'm telling you exactly
okay,
what
but
he
I think it may have been taken out of context, because I think that we were talking about what was going on in St. Louis. So if you talk about what happened in St. Louis at that time, then yes, I agree with what he said. If you put it in overall with everybody, no, I don't believe in that. But I do believe that when it started, what he was talking about, I agree with.
I don't know if I do, because I followed that. I was doing a radio show at the time and followed that case very closely. And the hands up, don't shoot, and that whole thing absolutely never happened. So, you know, a lot of the cases that it was based on. But anyway, the whole thing is the NFL is seeing. You're starting to see some numbers for the NFL that do not look good over the last few weeks as far as people attending games. I believe we saw a couple of blackouts, TV blackouts, because they didn't sell enough tickets at a couple places. When a blackout happens, you're not much of a sportsman, right?
Not at all.
So the way it works in the NFL is, let's say, and this happened when I was in Jacksonville a lot, because it's more of a college football town, but they have a pro football team there. If they didn't sell a certain number of tickets that the NFL deems is appropriate for their size stadium, then the game would not be broadcast on local television.
Okay.
So that's a possibility that people were talking about. And I think we saw a couple of them this weekend, places that hadn't had blackouts recently having them. We'll see exactly what happens with that. But the whole vice president thing and the whole, listen, I don't agree with that means of protest. That's fine. I'm allowed to say I don't like what they're doing. They're allowed to do it. I'm allowed to respond to it.
Absolutely.
And that's freedom of speech. There
Absolutely.
You go, right there. Nobody's throwing anybody in jail. So you have your freedom of speech. The government's not stopping you. And that's basically all I have to say about it. You know, that's all there is. Like, I will tell you this, watching football two weekends ago when after the president made his statements and it was the big news item last weekend, it made watching football irritating for me, which is kind of how I like to relax on Sundays. Every time it was halftime, I had to change the channel because as much as Phil Simms and Boomer Esiason and people like that know about football, I don't really care about their political opinions or their opinions on protests and stuff like that. I want to hear them talk about football. So, you know, I would change the channel, and it seems from the numbers that we're seeing on TV ratings, there's a lot of people that agree with that. I don't even know if it has to do with whether they agree or not with the protests. It's just stop polluting my football.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about this during what I think of as a distraction. So yeah, we'll see exactly what happens with that. But the whole veteran thing, how people have pulled us into that.
Like, again,
it's on behalf of the veterans, both sides saying like, oh, look, veterans support this. No, not all of us do. Yeah. Some of us do. Some of us don't. So stop saying that.
Yeah.
The other side saying veterans are all against this. Nah, also not true. There are those who support it. There are those who are against it. It just depends.
Anybody says that a certain group is all for something or all against something, then usually you got to know that that's wrong because not everybody's going to think the same way. And I find it silly when people do that. And it's kind of insulting.
Yeah. It is. And, you know, I mean, as we've seen over the past couple of weeks, some military members and veterans apparently serve in support of communism and think that that's the greatest thing. Go to connectivevets.com for the latest on Rapone, the young second lieutenant from 10th Mountain Division, who apparently, our latest story came out on Friday, I believe it was, that apparently it was documentable he was at West Point, that he had some issues there by a lieutenant colonel who was a history professor who alleges some pretty awful behavior from Rapone at the time. And these stories, he's just the gift that keeps on giving if you color military and veteran issues.
Would be interesting to talk to the history professor if anybody gets a chance to, because since he knows...
I don't think he's talking much about
it. You know, that would be very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, we had West Point spoke to their public affairs office, and they're investigating it and seeing what's going on there. That may lead to a whole nother segment of questions. You know, when we speak of what's happening in the military and legal stuff, okay, Rapone, that we don't know exactly what's going to happen there. Manning, Private Manning, that whole thing is done and over with. Mm-hmm. Bo Bergdahl, Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl, expected to plead guilty to desertion and misbehavior before the end. The enemy. This is the guy who was in the 8 years. He was in the possession of the Taliban, or 7 years, something like that. A long time. And he was also now going to be in the possession of the U.S. prison system for a long time because he's pleading guilty. And this was one where I heard the story from the perspective that most of us in the United States heard it, where, you know, soldier was captured. Yeah. And then you didn't hear too much about it. You just knew he was out there. He was one of those few people that we didn't know their location. There were a couple who we thought might be deserters. There were a couple who appeared to have just been taken prisoner. I was under the impression he was taken prisoner. Then I got to Afghanistan and started hearing things. And the things that I was hearing were not good about him. And that's when I started getting the information that he essentially just left his post. He was in a combat outpost. His claim that he was going to try to argue at trial was that there was misbehavior on his combat outpost. He was being led improperly. His bosses were no good. The officers running the combat outpost were bad officers. Uh-huh. And he wanted to report on them. And to do so, he had to get to the main FOB, the forward operating base for the area. So he decided to do so by leaving his weapon and body armor behind and just walking out of the combat outpost in the middle of the night. So he was going to try to ninja his way over to the FOB to report on what's going at the combat outpost. It's like, it's the most ridiculous cockamamie story I've ever heard in my life. What, without your weapon, with no body armor? Like, okay, if you think you can make it there unarmed, what did you think they were going to think? Well, that's a pale Afghan. Yeah. But I suppose, I mean, it doesn't have a gun or a body. He is wearing U.S. Army ACU camouflage, but he doesn't have body armor on or a rifle. So he's clearly not one of them. We'll just let him go on through. Of course, the Taliban found him apparently within like a couple hours of him leaving the base because he was in a pretty hairy area, and he was held there and... A lot of questions about that. People going out and searching for him, special operations people going out and searching for him, his unit going out and searching for him, because they didn't know what had happened, although they had a pretty good idea because they knew this guy, you know, it's like with when we broke the story of Second Lieutenant Rapone being released for standards from the Ranger Battalion, that one we did break at connectingvets.com. The him previously being written up at West Point. We didn't break that one, but it's very rare that someone's going to do something like what Rapone did with zero history behind him. It's just very rare. Same thing with Bergdahl. So he was kind of known as kind of a malcontent.
Do we know if there's anything that we have that he's said in the past about that kind of gives us any idea that he's kind of leaning towards being a deserter?
They said that he had written letters to his father saying he didn't like being in the army and that kind of stuff, and claiming that he was being mistreated by the officers there. He said that he had attempted to report his officers there for all of that, but I don't know if there's any actual paperwork that shows that happened. He says he told them he wanted to go and report them, and they wouldn't let him, so that's why he had to leave on his own. Mm-hmm. But again, he did so unarmed in Afghanistan, which, dude, no, been there, bad idea, been outside the wire, bad idea, been on patrols, bad idea to be out there without a firearm. Listen, my job there was to document things, photos, video, writing. I was still heavily armed when I went out there because this is the kind of thing that can happen if you're just walking around without a gun. Somebody will go, whoop, and when you do it in the middle of the night and they find you crawling through bushes and they go, what's this? Then they keep you, and of course, they traded some people that were pretty bad guys that had been held at Guantanamo Bay in order to get Bergdahl back. And some of those, I believe, have been seen having some contact again with Al-Qaeda and the Taliban and other organizations, headed right back to the battlefield if they can, which we kind of thought might happen. Yep. So, he's expected to plead guilty. Sentencing is about 2 weeks away still, October 23rd, according to individuals with knowledge of the case, not authorized to discuss it, demanding anonymity. You know how it goes with that stuff. You know how it goes with the morning briefing. It's our Monday edition. Again, Bunker Labs Austin, some miscommunication there. We weren't able to speak to them. Their muster happens tomorrow, October 10th. You can go to bunkerlabs.org/Austin. See you tomorrow.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.